RadioInfluence.com. Podcasting redefined.
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well, why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 stories, office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion, a lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high, they are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
pill. ...nervous system of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
9/11truth.org.
Doubt. WhatReallyHappened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
I'm ready. Live from the spacious, occupied studios of Out on the Ledge Studios, it is Dangerous Conversation on RadioInfluence.com. What's going on, world? What's going on, internets? How the fuck are you? Doing okay? Making it through life? Do you get a chance to spew your venom on social media like I do? We're going to do a lot of that tonight. Just go over just a whole bunch of social media stories that I either absolutely love or absolutely detest. We will talk a little. I don't like talking politics on the level of, like, your newspaper when you go to get your coffee in the morning at Circle K and it goes, Trump wins New Hampshire, you know, that kind of crap. But we will talk about ideologies and if we are going to fix this mess, and I don't know if we will, but I am I'm just an optimistic son of a bitch. I've always been that way. But I do think maybe fixing it might mean dipping into several different ideologies. So now for people that have listened to Dangerous Conversation like over the last 2 years, you probably know who Dave is. But if you're new to my show, because you're, let's say you're, you know, an MMA fan and, you know, kind of cross-pollinating over here at Radio Influence, then you don't know, like, the cast of crazies. And I got to introduce these guys a little at a time because they can be overwhelming. You like your talk-up so far, man?
I do.
Okay, stand by. I'm not done yet. And Dave's a self-proclaimed anarchist. And, you know, when you hear that word, anarchy in the UK, it's like all you think is, like, the words you've heard, like, you know, assigned, and suddenly the, you know, like the TV news will throw anarchy and then you'll see this massive riot. You know, no control, no system playing itself out right there. Well, that could be considered anarchic behavior because you don't, if you're rioting, you don't care about the structure you're in, but that's not what anarchy means. And it's been given a bad name, and Dave is a self-proclaimed anarchist. There's many people out there on social media that are starting to say, what do we need government for at all? And I mean at all. I'm a little bit, there's like a segment of me, there's a little libertarian in me, there's some progressive liberal in me. There's a little conservative when it comes to things like spending money in government and size of government and maybe keeping kids safe on the internet. We could use a little watchdog out there to keep kids for at least a couple years of their life. But I have a tendency to, you know, I call myself politically agnostic because I am. I don't like the idea of subscribing to one way of thinking because not only am I limiting myself, I'm automatically putting myself in a box for you. And you can go, oh, Ledge, yeah, he's a liberal, or he's a progressive, or he's a libertarian, or he's an anarchist, or you know. So tonight we're going to have a little fun because Dave is not shy. First of all, Dave has a nickname in the land of radio, and Dave's done his own program, and Dave's been co-hosting a program with another guy in another network. So he's no shy, I got to, you know, kind of get it out of him kind of guy. He's actually the guy where I drop my head going, oh, God, here he goes again. So Dave Cunningham, otherwise known as Four Toed Jones, he sacrificed a toe. How many years ago did you lose your toe?
It's actually coming up on 4, I think. It was 420. Yeah, 4 years ago, coming up on 4 years.
You got your toe chopped off on 420?
I went into the hospital on 420. It was chopped off on 421.
Ah, okay. So you're one digit off. That's right, folks. It's 2-for-1 cocktails tonight here at the Ledger Lounge. Dave lost that, you know, health issues like we all do. It's like, this could kill you or cut it off. Cut it off.
Let's be honest.
Was that a tough decision?
Well, no. Well, I didn't really have much of a decision, but if I were to put a gun to your head and say, look, I'm going to take a jelly bean-sized piece of your body off, whether it's the tip of your pinky finger, the tip of your nose, your earlobe.
As long as it's not my dick, I don't care.
Or one of your pinky toes.
I don't care.
With the pinky toes.
Exactly.
I could still wear sandals and nobody notices.
Did you? So. Yeah, I know. I've seen it. I threw up in my mouth a little, but I was okay. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Did you miss it? You know, like they'll say, like, guys, you know, and let's not compare a pinky toe to a man coming back from war who doesn't have a leg anymore, but his brain still registers that it's there. You hear that story all the time. Is that like that with a small appendage? Do you still feel like it was there or no?
No, I have no phantom toe. It's gone.
The phantom toe.
But there's a little bit more to that because anybody that's heard me on the other networks knows that I have this
big
disability.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Well, yes, describe it, by the way. And it's something I never heard of until I met you. But go ahead and, you know, we got 2 hours here. Go for it.
I'm going to do it short and sweet. It's called paraneal muscular atrophy. And basically, I have these peripheral muscles that are atrophying. For most of my life, I've had no feeling in my toes anyway. So missing the toe, I'm really not missing anything.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't screw up my balance because my balance is screwed up as it is.
But your hurdling career and your Olympic triathlon future were, you know, sadly struck down.
Yes.
Yes. The reason I say that, because Dave's not a big sports fan. Mm-hmm. The reason I like Dave is he's not an antithesis of me. He's not complete opposite. But, you know, Dave and I are very 420 friendly. We also understand the magic of psilocybin and its effects in both our lives, not together like we're a couple. But we both have positive stories to tell, as many, many do. So we do see eye to eye on, let's say, the socially, especially the body issues. But when it gets to government, I'm with Dave. The Fed's out, you know, the Fed is a Ponzi scheme. I mean, if you go to the head of the snake, yes, it's rigged. but there's nothing wrong with talking about that. I address that issue and, you know, we bring guests on and we talk about that. But we're also, you know, in other words, what idealistically could be happening, which is what we should all still focus on. I get that. Versus what is realistically happening. And the idea of in the next 4 years, are 40 million people going to get a little help or not? So Dave and I go back and forth when it comes to who, Dave?
Bernie.
Bernie. Dave Bernie does not Sanders. Feel the burn. Dave just sees socialism as the big S word. I don't want to speak for you. You tell me. Christ, you're my co-host here tonight. I don't have to speak for you. Go ahead. Why don't you like Bernie?
Well, it's the socialism that I don't like. You know, he seems like a nice enough guy. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today. We're both from Brooklyn. My friend is actually, you know, Jewish. He's not a real Jew, but, you know, he's Jewish.
Is he like a fake Jew? I mean, how do you not be a real Jew?
He's as Jewish as I am Catholic.
Okay, basically he was born into a Jewish family, but he doesn't practice the religion.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Like I'm French-Canadian, okay? But I'm not from France.
But I said to him, I was like, how do we not like a Jew from Brooklyn? You know, we should love this guy, you know?
And he's got the Christopher Reeve, not Christopher, Doc Brown. Who played Doc Brown? Doc Brown.
Christopher Lloyd.
He's got Christopher Lloyd's hair. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, did you see him, by the way, doing the Titanic piece on Saturday Night Live?
I did.
That was awesome. How did the 2% get on those boats? You know, and then Larry David, who's been playing him. By the way, if Sanders somehow becomes president, Larry David's going to have to be on SNL every week.
It's going to revive his career.
Yeah. Well, not that he needs it. The guy wrote half of Seinfeld. He's a multi-millionaire. Mm-hmm. Give me what scares you about him versus what we have right now.
It's not him. It's the concept of socialism. And then everybody that I say socialism says, well, it's democratic socialism, as if putting the word democratic in front of socialism changes the definition of socialism. It does not. And you and I have even gone back and forth about this.
Sure.
It doesn't, because if I were to say, all right, so is a dictatorship socialist make it better? it doesn't.
All right, well, let me ask you this. In 2008, we bailed out a bunch of banks. Wasn't that socialism?
We didn't bail out banks.
Oh, no. The current system that it was in play bailed out a bunch of banks, okay? That system, our tax money bailed. Shouldn't they have been allowed to fail? Of course.
Absolutely.
All right, well, then why are we okay with that socialism? Why is most of the country got fine with that socialism?
Are you okay with it?
No.
I wasn't okay with it either.
You know what we'd have? You know what we'd have? Probably some guys behind bars. And Dave, let's say the big five have to break up. Well, what happens? You get 30 or 40 babies all kind of, oh, I'll take that, I'll take this. You know, you're getting enough pennies on the dollar, you know, that kind of thing. And then you have, next thing you know, you turn around, you've got 50 banks out there competing amongst each other, not colluding. And you have a much more balanced capitalistic system because they were allowed to fail. But they made it sound like, you know, they held a gun to our head and said, hey, if we fail, the whole country's going down with us. And everybody believed it.
Exactly. It was BS. And 90% of the people that called their representatives and said, do not allow this to happen. And the other
80% of the country was against it. 80% of the country. Yeah.
No, they called and said no, and then the last 10% said hell no. So it was almost 100%
yeah.
were not
or 90,
behind this.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right, 90.
But whatever it happens to be.
So that's an example. That's socialism. Okay, I'll give you another socialism.
I drove
home from work today on roads, a national highway system that was built.
What about the roads?
Okay, the snow plows. I mean, is all of this in your world, does it need to reverse its path and go all the way to privately contracted? Everything is about open bidding. Everybody's about the best, whoever makes the best widget. You know, I get it. I get going back, you know, to that perfectly level playing field makes sense in a capitalistic system. But right now, go ahead.
My whole thing is not let's change the system. Just allow me to do my thing. You do your thing. If you want to pay your taxes to go for these things that probably are going to not benefit anybody except for a small amount of people, fine. You do that. I'm going to work myself. I want to stay here. I don't want to pay taxes. I want to take my money, the money that I make, and then maybe donate it to one person or one family or one charity that I see fit. Look, I'm a straight up atheist, but I would sooner donate my money to a Catholic charity than I would to the government to handle the charity because they screwed up.
Well, yeah, no one likes the middleman. I mean, I went from being raised in a religion to, you know, my own personal version of what's going on. I don't need a middleman, and I've gotten rid of that. Well, there's always going to be the middleman. I mean, you and I have – we'll talk about weed a little later, by the way, and we'll talk about the tiers, T-I-E-R-S, those tiers.
Right.
And the taxation system and stuff, and whether it's good or bad or whether there's a happy medium. But I wanted to kind of get back to Sanders. You know, everyone keeps talking about socialists. This guy's a socialist. And all I see is a man – who wants to do a couple of things, reinstate Glass-Steagall so we can't have this boom-bust cycle. In other words, if you can't rein in the Fed, if you can't cut the complete head off it, why not go to the banks just underneath it in that big old pyramid and start limiting them a little bit more watchdog, a little bit more SEC monitoring, a little bit less insider trading, but even more importantly, if I have a private account where I save money, that they can't get their hands on it. That's one example. He's also about, you know, hey, if you move your corporation off the states and you go into some foreign country or Bermuda, then guess what? To avoid, you know, and they all do it. I mean, they all do it. I mean, even fucking Apple did it for $60 billion or whatever. I don't know what it was. It was just a ridiculous amount of tax money that we don't get. So I see him essentially as the guy who's concerned with reining in corporate malfeasance and the big banks. Isn't that a little bit of a fix? And we'll get to what anarchists believe. I want to give you plenty of time. But isn't that it's much more of a fix than anybody else is offering.
Well, this is true, but the reality of it is one man can't make a difference in this country because it's Congress that makes the laws and the president makes no laws whatsoever.
He'll have a mandate? You don't think there's enough people pissed off? Sometimes that leader, you know, or maybe, hey, what the fuck? You know, let's just sign a couple, I don't know, let's get the presidential decrees. We're going to change this. We're going to change that. You know.
You want him to rule by executive order?
I know. You're talking.
That's a dangerous thing.
Well, it's already going down.
Right. And I don't like those either. Like, I'm not for the stuff that Obama did. I'm not for the stuff that W did. I'm not for stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Keep going back because Clinton, right. It actually, you know, it's funny because we talk about that a lot. People say, oh, yeah, you know, Barack's assigned more things into being, you know, like that oligarch king kind of thing. And then you go backwards in time and you realize he has done more than Bush and he's only 7 years in. But you look at Clinton did more than Bush. Bush one did more than Clinton, and Reagan actually go all the way back to Reagan was like over three or I can't remember the numbers. I don't want to quote the numbers. I'll be too far off, but it was, this isn't new. That's the point I'm making. It's not new,
but the devil is in the details. Okay.
Go for it.
Executive orders were designed for like
two different names. I know where you're going with this.
We should actually have the Easter celebration on the White House lawn. That's an executive order. That's kind of what they were designed for. It was an administrative thing. You know, it wasn't designed to create law for 50 fucking states.
Right? Or get a kill list.
Well, there's no executive order for that. That's just stuff.
It's just there. It's just right. There.
That's a whole nother show. Mm-hmm. So, executive orders over time, you know, let's say Reagan did, you know, twice as many executive orders, but I'm not sure. You know, again, the devil's in the details. I've got to read them. You know, so maybe he made, you know, a proclamation that today is Secretary's Day.
Yeah.
You know, that's benign. Who gives a crap about that? But what Bernie wants to, or what the people, what Bernie himself doesn't bother me. It's the people that support him that scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, you're worried about the handouts. You know, the people that are looking at, oh, the government's, you know, I get it. And a lot of people talk about not only people that abuse the system from the left. And I know if you look at what the banks do to us versus what some people who, let's say, rig their little, you know, maybe they're on welfare and maybe, you know, they're welfare mamas and they abuse the system that way. You can't deny that people do that. But when you look at the percentages of what the banks have done to us versus people on the left, neither of us, neither side is perfect. That's the point. I'm getting it. But you know what? I still see this guy looking out for that 40, I think it's 40 million people that are at or below the poverty line. He's, you know, his famous line is you shouldn't have to work 40 hours and struggle. You know, you should. I don't see this man as going, oh, don't worry. The government's just going to take care of you. Sit back. I see a man who wants to, you know, he's still pro-war. I don't like that about him at all. I don't like it at all. He dances around. Oh, you know, I voted down Iraq. And I'm like, ever since then, man, you have just, you know, let's put it this way. You're not Gary Johnson. You're not anti-interventionist like Jill Stein. You're definitely, you know, all about Israel. You're Jewish. So, and you know, I get that part. But he can still look at the overspending in the military-industrial complex and a lot of other things, including, you know, why are we still giving big oil incentives and what we just talked about, you know, corporations moving shit offshore. I think he knows he can rein in a lot of money and then turn around and put it into infrastructure, and that means jobs, and that means fewer people. And, you know, and I know he wants to bump up the minimum wage. So I see, you know, Ron Paul I liked, but Ron Paul didn't just – it's not like, you know, he's like, oh, we're going to get rid of everything. And then that's why I couldn't wrap it around Ron Paul. I was like, I get this guy. He's all about the Constitution. And he doesn't want intervention. And he wants to audit the Fed. And again, he wants to basically, you know, go back and kind of maybe cut the head off the snake. Bernie's not going to be that guy. I know that. And that's why I kind of go back and forth with you is what is idealistic and perfect in our minds versus what is currently realistic. That's why I like the guy. That's why I like him.
You know, he says good stuff. He says the truth. He says things that matter to people. But the reality of it is, okay, how many presidential campaign promises actually come through? All right, let's go back to 2012. Let's go back to 2008. Remember, I'm going to close Guantanamo.
I'm not. You know what? You know what? I'm not going to put him. I know exactly what you're saying. And Obama's been a bullshitter. Ever since, you know.
So was Bush. So was Clinton. So was Bush.
Yeah.
And so was Reagan. And we can go back in time. They're all none of their so fucking campaign promises.
Okay. Do you think it's he can't get? In other words, let's say he's elected, and then he comes with all these plans, and neither the left or the right work with him, or only the left. You know, that's why obviously he's running Democratic. If he's elected, he hopes to have maybe a little of at least one side of Congress help him. Otherwise, if he runs independent, then you know, then where does he sit? If he actually hopes to get shit done, he's going to need Congress's approval. A lot of people say, by the way, Obama's not getting that from the right. If you look at the right, you'll see them anything this man has proposed. And I'm not saying I like Obama. I'm just saying that. I don't know if he's a liar. I think Obama's a teleprompter reader. He's been ushered into the presidency so quickly out of Illinois. You know, no one knew who he was 4 years before the election. Bernie Sanders has been in Congress 40 years, and he's consistent. You know,
he's been consistent.
Congress, he's like Ron Paul. In other words, in his consistency, not in his ideology. But that's why I like both those guys, is because they're like, this is who I am. This is what I've done in Congress in 3 decades or 4 decades. And I like that. That's what I like about Bernie, dude.
All right. So let's look at Bernie's record. How many bills has he introduced that actually became law? Very little.
Yeah, he's not, you know, and the thing is, he is a go-along-and-get-along guy. You know, if you look at Ron Paul's voting record versus his when it comes to war and things like that, excuse me, the whole, you know, he kind of melts away. But, you know, I don't want to rain on our wonderful Bernie parade here, but, you know, the realistic in me, the realist in me, you know, knows that the game is rigged. And, you know, when you beat someone essentially 60% to 30%, and she ends up with more delegates than you do, then you realize that, you know, the state, the voters of the state have spoken, but the politicians within the state, the delegates, they got a different plan. And I think you brought that up a couple of months ago, like, hey, you know, people love Bernie, but I think you showed me that. Go ahead and expand on that a tiny bit.
I actually just looked it up today. Bernie's got 2 delegates. There's a whole thing about super delegates and blah, blah, blah. Clinton's got them all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I hate Clinton more than I don't like Bernie. Right? I wouldn't vote for either one of them because Clinton's she's a criminal, right? Just on the email server thing alone, all right? Because I'm an IT guy. I have the skill set to set up my own. Oh, thank God that echo's gone. I have a skill set to set up my own email server. Why would I do that? Because I want to have control over it, right? That's the reason why you do it. And for Secretary of State to do this, to be in control of all these emails, skirts what's the word I'm looking for, where they could see you do it. It skirts – fuck. Did I lose you?
I'm here. You're breaking up a little. I don't know what you did. The moment you said – the moment you said to me that the echo was gone, you started to break up a little bit. Oh, by the way, Dave is on Mumbler. Mumble, I'm sorry.
And I'm a whole county away.
And he's a whole county away here. So now you're not breaking up again. But are you getting an echo? Are you hearing me an echo or you?
No, it's me that's an echo. Like if you had speakers on the background. But I don't want to do tech talk.
Yeah, but no, now your mic sounds perfect again. So keep going. Fantastic. All right, keep going. the word you were searching for?
Transparency.
Okay, there you go. Yep.
If you're a government official, everything that you do should be – there should be a record of it so that it can be looked up for later on. She hid all that stuff. So I'm no fan of Clinton
It's the new Watergate tapes. Her emails are the new Watergate tapes. What do you think her emails were about? I heard some of them were leaked.
Actually, some of the emails that she's actually given to them cannot be leaked. Or cannot be allowed out. And actually,
they're redacted.
Yeah, they won't allow them out because it's got top secret stuff in it. But
yeah,
she's not going
to
go down
for
it.
About how we're going to invade Syria. Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed.
Whatever.
Guaranteed. And what it might lead to in Europeans and the flock of people not wanting to live under bombs who decide to go to Europe. You know, when people say it's a shame this happened because that happened and then that led to this and then that led to that. I always say, what if that's the plan? What if not only is obviously undermining Syria because of the gas pipelines right there, you got to remember, they're right on the Mediterranean there. They're strategically located. Not only that, they have their own fuel supplies. And by the way, much like Libya, the Syrians, even though Assad's the bad guy, and of course Gaddafi was the bad guy, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying these people might not have tortured or done anything. I'm not saying they have. I'm not saying they haven't. What I'm saying is the Syrians and the Libyans had it pretty good. They had good worlds. I mean, they had free college. You know, believe me, the infrastructure was solid. Now I saw a drone video today, and it was just depressing. It was just, it looked like, Christ, it looked like Lebanon. Remember, Lebanon was just this constantly bombed out city, and it looks brutal. And now, of course, we have millions of refugees and the influx in Europe. And now we have the backlash there. And then we have the anti-Muslim backlash. And Dave, if you were wanting, if you were like, you know, the oligarchs, and you wanted a lot of people scared of each other and nervous about each other and hating each other and fearing each other, what better than to put the world's two biggest religions up against each other and have an influx of them into Europe, which is, of course, mainly Christian? And in the meanwhile, oh, yes, that beautiful pipeline that you want to build from Saudi Arabia up the Gulf and all the politics and involved, I think a lot of those emails that Hillary spread, or I think it might not be direct references to these things, but because then it's kind of like, but if they're redacting it that heavily, it's got to be slam dunk. It's got to be some kind of slam dunk. It can't be, you know, her bullshitting about her. Some cell phone bill, and she's trying to cheat on it. You know, not pay taxes. this is geopolitics. That's what that is. Yeah,
definitely. And the thing is, she's going to skate through it. You know,
she's already. You know, I get it. You know, hey, geez, America is really progressing. We put a man of color in the White House. You know, I get that. I'm not a person of color. But I remember watching the people cry during his inauguration, and I think a lot of people of color, whether that's their mom, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, and they, in their mind, they saw progress. There's a man of color in the White House. And you know what? I got that. I completely got that. And if you were trying to – as remember the war, anti-war protest? Remember 07? Remember how the shit was hitting the fan? I mean, big-time shit was hitting the fan. The economy was falling apart. The wars were already 5-6 years old at their time. Bush is coming out of office, and Mr. Hope and Change comes in, and he's good-looking, and he's articulate, and yes, he's a man of color. And I'm thinking, man, if you're the oligarchs and you want to play a card, boom. Well, what's the next card besides man of color? Woman.
A female, yeah. Woman. Definitely.
Because people in this country will look at progress. They'll go, yeah, well, we've had a black president and a woman president in the last, you know, let's say 8-9 years once she gets escorted into the White House. Do you think, you know, Trump, I mean, I'm looking, I don't want to talk politics, you know, especially this kind of shit all night because I want to get to some fun stuff here and talk a little bit of your beliefs in anarchy and stuff. But I just, you know, I thought Trump was going to be her escort. You know, they were going to put him on the right, and no one would want him. Half of his own party wouldn't want him, versus Hillary Clinton. Her husband was president. She's been Secretary of State, going and going, you know, basically it's Coke and Pepsi, but the Coke doesn't have like maggots in it. Okay. Right. So you think you have two choices, but you really only got one.
Right.
That's what I think. Do you think that, you know, he's part of the escort to get her into the White House? I do.
I said 3 years ago that I think it's going to be a Bush Clinton.
You did.
Yeah. And
yeah, Jeb was the anointed one. You're right. At that time.
Well, because I'm going by history. I'm a realist. I take facts and figures and then try to predict the future. Right? I don't use emotion at it at all. I don't like Jeb Bush at all because, you know, he was the governor of the state when I moved down here. And
please clap. Please clap. Every time we mention Jeb Bush, right? we have to say, please clap.
up until just this last primary in New Hampshire, Jeb Bush actually had more endorsements, political endorsements, than anybody else. Like, I'm looking at the screen right now at 538.com, and you spell it out. It's not the numbers. It's F-I-V, whatever.
Okay, yeah.
And now Rubio's got 65. Bush has 51. All right, so let's scroll down. Donald Trump, 0. Bernie Sanders, 2. All right, so the two people that won the New Hampshire primary have jack when it comes to political backing.
Yeah.
Right. This is just a dog and pony show. And you really have to look at things realistically, not emotionally. I know you want your guy to win, whether it's Bernie.
No.
I don't mean you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, most people, yes. Okay, I see where you're going with that. I just, I, I'm just looking at if we're going to get some type of immediate relief, this is the only man at least speaking out loud about how we need to rein in the banks. The banks are just going to keep doing, especially since they paid no price. There was no accountability. Not only did they not pay your price, they all wrote themselves bonuses.
They got paid 100 cents on the dollar. They didn't even, like, the government even said, yeah, we'll bail you out at 25 cents on the dollar. They said, well, all right, we'll give you everything that you've lost. And thanks, you know, and my kid and my grandkids and my grandkids' grandkids are going to have to pay for that crap.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Do you think there'll ever be debt forgiveness? I mean, they did it in one country. They'll do it in a country like Germany after World War II. They did. It helped set their – it's kind of like the reset button. You know, and they kept money flowing a couple, I think it was 2 weeks pay or 3 weeks pay and all that kind of things. But, you know, money is debt. Debt is money.
Right.
And if you forgive the debt, essentially you're literally wiping dollars out, which, by the way, would not only stop inflation, it would reverse it because the remaining money. In other words, would a trillionaire or a billionaire write off, let's say there's a trillionaire. And they're like, you know what? My system's completely going to collapse unless I hit the reset button. Let's do, you know, $5 trillion worth of debt relief, and we'll do it. This country, that blah, 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 blah. Do you think we'd ever see that?
No. And you hit the nail on the head when you said it would stop inflation and possibly regress to deflation. Most people don't know how money's work. You're like – you and Ben are the only two people that I really know that kind of know how money works. And – inflation is man-made. Most people think inflation is the natural progression of prices getting higher, and that's false. It is man-made. They want you to spend money because let's just take like a standard. I'm wearing glasses. I'm wearing, you know, $2 reading glasses, right? The guy comes up, he makes these glasses, and then as he's making glasses, he figures out ways of making it. Making his product cheaper.
Right? Steve Martin and the Jerk.
Exactly.
Yeah, and Carl Reiner, you just see. Right. Yeah.
So as a business owner, you figure out ways of making more money by making your process more efficient. I buy new product. I do things a different way. I blah, blah, blah. And over time, we have empirical data that states this because 10 years – well, in 2004, I bought my first 30-inch LCD monitor or TV, and it cost me $3,000.
I know.
Today, I could buy a 48-inch one for $300, yep. Right? Because they made the process streamlined. More people want stuff, so the prices go down.
Well, when you get into more factory production, the prices are going to drop. When you get into whatever microchip runs that and you can produce that chip cheaper – next thing you know, everything, you know, that thing. But you were mentioning inflation. I just want to kind of add that is every time they print a new dollar and essentially comes into the world as a loan, like if $100 billion are loaned to Iran, that means there's $100 billion new dollars in the pool. And if your money's in the pool and everybody's money's in the pool, that means your money's worth less. That's all inflation is.
Right.
You know, and most people think of what you were saying is, no, the cost of my beer is going up. No. The purchasing power of your money is going down.
Okay? Please
clap. that's inflation.
And, that's exactly. It's inflating the money supply. It's not it's not prices going up. It's just that more money's in circulation and the value of your dollar goes down. And I liken it to, right, so you and I are pretty much the same age. Remember the Cabbage Patch Kids in the late 80s?
Yeah, somewhere in the 80s, they were a huge, I mean, you know, people waiting in lines, you know, they'd sell out in 60 seconds, that kind of shit, yeah.
Right, and people were reselling them, in Brooklyn at least, they were reselling them for twice as much because they wanted a Cabbage Patch Kid for the kid for Christmas.
Right? Yes, and they only released a certain amount.
Right, the value of a
exactly.
Right. The value of a Cabbage Patch doll commanded twice as much Federal Reserve notes than needed to be, right? And a year later, when production caught up with demand, now all of a sudden people are paying regular retail and they're not going crazy for it. And a year afterwards, when production exceeded demand, you could pay 10% what you would have paid 2 years ago. So it's the same thing with a dollar bill. The
On Cabbage Patch Kids. It's like, imagine if someone like, hey, honey, you buy them for this, you sell them for twice as much. I mean, before there was, you know, like the places where you can do it on the web now, like you know, where you were.
eBay.
eBay. I'm sorry. I couldn't remember eBay. How the hell do you not remember eBay? yeah, but there were people out there always, you know, there's always a speculator out there going, how much can I sell that for? Yeah, really? Right. Yeah, sure.
Right. And speculation is part of the problem as well, but you can't fault them. They're just trying to make money. It's the controlled inflation of the monetary supply that is literally taking purchasing power right out of your bank account. It's literally stealing money out of your wallet. Well, I shouldn't say literally, figuratively.
Yeah, basically, because you know, $10 in your wallet, and you could buy, let's say, $10 worth of gas, and it's a, let's say, $1.50, right? Well, they just put another $5 trillion worth of money into the system by pressing a couple of keys on a keypad, and suddenly that $10 you have is now worth $9.50.
Exactly. And most people don't understand this. And I believe if half the population of this country understood, you know, what the Federal Reserve is doing.
Well, we came close. That did you think the audit the Fed thing was drama? I mean, a theater, or did you think it was legit?
What, with Bernie?
No, because wasn't it Rubio who wrote the bill and then didn't even vote on auditing the Fed? I mean, he was like co-sponsor of the bill to audit the Fed, and then he didn't even vote.
Well, you know why? Because his fucking wife works for Goldman Sachs.
Exactly. In other words, theater. Theater. Exactly.
There was a video of him like 18, 19 years old, and it's just like as I'm off the cuff thing. It's like, well, what are you going to do? It's like, yeah, I want world domination. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
You can't really hold a guy to what he says at 19, but you kind of get an idea.
Amazon women. You know, really cool stuff. Like every woman's like 6'2". have you watched? Did you watch debates? I never watch them. I never.
Oh God, no! Debates. I didn't even know that they were going on.
And I love that. You know, just all you got to do is go to your favorite website the next day, and you'll get like you know the sound bites, the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I have a couple of people on my Facebook feed that are, you know, Bernie fanatics. Not you. You're not a fanatic about it. You're really just trying to show people. But there are people that are, you know, blindly following this guy. And, of course, you know, this morning I wake up and it's just like, Bernie won, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Jesus Christ, who gives a shit? It's one out of many. And, you know, you got to look at the delegates. And it's just like, man, it's interesting to watch the fervor from now that I don't vote anymore and I'm, you know, a full-fledged anarchist. It's just interesting to watch the destruction of people. And you know, come election time, the balloon's going to be deflated. And 4 years from now, there's going to be some other savior that's going to save them. And it's not going to happen.
Let's go. I want to go a little Alex Jones on here for a second. After World War II was over, Japan was completely smashed. Germany, which was, of course, a big economy, was completely obliterated. Europe, England. I mean, we were the only real industrial nation because, you know, our country's, you know, our factories that were building cars and then 90 days later were building B-52 bombers. That's where the military industrial complex was born. We were the world's engine, okay? Alex says, you know, I don't listen to Alex that much anymore, but he would always say, if you're the oligarchs or the bankers, or, you know, the top of the food chain, whoever you want to, how you want to describe those people, they needed the American engine. So everything was great. But now, you know, China, India, look at the different, you know, countries that are really starting to prosper and produce shit. That's really what it means. Are doing that, and I think they're kind of pulling the plug on us. They don't care about us. So, you know, let's say we were AAA grade first world country. Now I'd say we're A grade first world country, and who knows? Maybe even if they keep it just seems like they're draining the keg here, and they don't care. I know I'm talking about the entire country, but you have to remember there are powerful people in control, and they don't seem to, you know, unless there's a profit for them, or maybe it's corporations that are all just fighting over the scraps, but I see us kind of getting kicked to the curb. I do.
Well, it's because the United States, unfortunately, kind of dictates what goes on around the world. We control England, we control Germany, we control France, you know, because we're giving money to them. And not only that, we have bases in every one of those countries.
Over 700 worldwide that we know about.
Yeah.
That we know
about. There's only 100, what, there's only 200 countries and we have bases in 180 of them.
Yeah.
You know, all right, so let me put it
this way. Except Iran.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Right, let me put it this way, all right. A guard dog is probably a good thing for me to guard my property with, right?
Sure.
All right. Is it good for me to put my guard, another guard dog at your house to guard my property?
Well, you know, that's the whole idea is, we're over there to stop them before they come over here. That's that mentality of, you know, we're gonna deal with the issue before the issue ever comes up and washes up on our shore.
We're going to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them.
Dude, we're still in We're still in World War II air bases we've had since the end of World War II. What's the big one there outside of Japan? They don't want us there. There's constant, the soldiers are, you know, there's all kinds
Okinawa
of.
Okinawa or something. Okinawa. Like that.
They're constantly, lots of local rape cases. In other words, the country, does not, they don't want us there anymore. We were there since, 1946 or 45, 46.
Right. Yeah. After we dropped two fucking nuclear bombs over there.
Yeah. So the idea that there's 700 military bases, is it keeping the world safe? Because the world doesn't seem like a safe place. And you would think if you have that many, you know, big sticks, walk quietly, carry the big stick. If we had that many big sticks, then why isn't the world just a perfectly peaceful place unless we're the issue?
Right, exactly.
Unless we're the issue.
This is why it doesn't surprise me that, you know, our quote-unquote allies are not kind of like, yeah, we're not going to do this with you anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're kind of pushing out the world reserve currency. But last year, Obama, without the consent of Congress, enacted sanctions on Russia. Russia buys a lot of shit from the European Union. Right. And France and England, they're like losing so much money because they can't sell stuff to them anymore. And now that France is getting like, well, fuck them, man. Why are you not allowing me to openly trade?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're always going to have the non-level playing field where if one country is economically more powerful or militarily, you know, it's kind of funny. And I played that opening piece the idea that we outspend the next 20 nations on quote defense unquote, or the next 30, and 20 of those nations are our allies. Okay, think about that. That's exactly what Dave's talking about. Is why do you know? And then you realize, you know, French produce fighter jets. The Swedes produce fighter jets. The Russians, not the Koreans. I think Japan doesn't do fine. But you've got at least four or five nations out there producing the next generation of fighter. Mm-hmm. Not because they're afraid of each other, certainly, but because it's about profit. It's about, you know, you build it up and then you blow it up and then you build it up again. And this is how you make money in the military industrial complex.
Right. All right. So let me ask you a question, Scott. If you're all right, so you know I am a gun proponent. I have
– Yeah, I was going to hope – well, obviously we were going there, but go for it. Yeah.
So between me and my son, there's two – I'm here, my 22-year-old son. Between the two of us, we have, I don't know, 12, 13 guns, right? If you wanted to take me down, would you come at me with – and, you know, straight on with, you know, your one gun? Probably not. Okay. How would you come after me economically?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Sure.
And that's what's going to take us down. Just yesterday, I was watching was it 1984, 1986, Red Dawn?
Now, yeah.
I've seen this movie many times. You usually catch it somewhere in the middle of it and you watch it to the end, right?
Yeah.
I watched it from the very beginning, the very first scene.
Yeah, the narration talks about how the breakdown occurred.
Yes.
Yes.
And then I'm watching this. I'm like, yeah, everybody's fighting. And I'm like, that is irrelevant now. What's fighting right now and who has the power is that it's every country on the planet is suffering economically, you know? So whereas, you know, they say Nicaragua and Honduras is fighting and blah, 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 and they get together and then they come after us and, you know, what's his face said, yeah, the Europeans are sitting this one out.
Yeah.
Because they got their own shit. And that's what's happening is they no longer need bullets anymore.
Well, most wars start with embargoes.
Okay? This is true.
You know, way back into the opiates where, you know, Japan didn't supply Europe with, and that's what created the opiate wars. There's wars named after that embargo. Mm-hmm. And you have the same thing. Hey, by the way, you know, we cut off Japan's supply of oil before World War II.
Okay? Exactly.
But they had no more, and they're not an oil-producing country. So we basically said, no oil from us.
Because no oil for you.
You and Germany, yeah, you, Germany and Italy are now in this little party, and we're over here, at least supporting England. We're not officially in the war yet. And all, what do you do? You embargo the most precious cargo there is, energy supplies. You know, you can't have an empire without energy. So we in other words, the reason I bring that up is if you look at a lot of how World War III would start, and you watch like the beginning of like a Terminator or the movie you were just talking about, it always isn't about tanks and guns and bombs. Mm. It's about some country is cut off economically. I mean, think about what we did to Iraq for 10 years, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Millions of children dead, or at least a half a million that we know about. Remember, Madeleine Albright was asked all about that.
Okay.
And, you know, that was a 10.
And that was in the 90s.
And that was a 10. That was a 10-year embargo where not only us, but our allies, a lot of our allies, would not ship anything to that country. And, of course, why do you think Russia becomes friends with that country? Because they're going, screw that. We'll take that market. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We'll take that market. Absolutely. So wars aren't fought over, like, you know, who has the most aircraft. Wars are fought over, like you said, either a devalued dollar, which is being dumped, and, you know, they keep talking about the crash. I think it's going to be a very slow letdown. Would you drop someone 10 feet off the ground, or would you slowly lower that on a rope and then have your, you know, problem, reaction, solution? Because I think they could create, and we're a very panicky people, earthlings, humans, but especially Americans. I don't think that's going to happen. Remember they shut down, what was it, last year? They shut down Wall Street after there was a lot of panicking trading, and I think the Dow had dropped like 500 in a day. And, you know what they did? They said, shut it off.
Yep.
So you can't have 1929 anymore. That's the point I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. They won't allow it. They won't allow it because you can't go to zero. If it goes to zero, they're out. We're not going to run back to the Fed and go, okay, let's redo this. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they have to dance over your head with a fear little crash, because I know every Alex Jones guest that sells gold has been talking about that fucking crash for about 10 years now. Okay? 06, 07. So I think it's more of dangle the fear and then slowly transition. I want to talk energy with you, and I definitely want to talk Bitcoin, and I certainly want to attend. But you know what? Let's touch a little bit on guns real quick.
Okay.
Give me the anarchist view of gun ownership.
Well, gun ownership isn't for anyone. Like, I just had a conversation last Friday about, this person's like, yeah, I shouldn't have a gun because I get angry. Like, I tend to, if I'm packing heat,
fact that you say packing heat makes me nervous.
Because
you're like fucking Clint Eastwood when you say that stuff.
All right. Well, all right. All so, right, punk.
I took your spot at the Denny's parking lot, but you know I'm packing heat. That kind of stuff makes me nervous.
I'll make it bland. If I'm carrying concealed, right?
Okay.
And there's some static that I could see coming around. I tend to be like, all right, I'm out because I know how this is going to end. You know, it's not going to end.
You don't
well.
Trust
I don't,
yourself.
No, it's not that I don't trust myself. I know that I refuse to be a victim. And what I do is
victim. Like, if you get into a shouting match in a parking lot, and it's 2 a.m., and one guy's drunk, and you're drunk, and, you know, did you ever see the movie Swingers?
No. Yeah, well, I've seen parts
of it. It's good. Well, you know, one of the guys there is packing heat, and he fucking pulls his gun out, and just, you know, he's like drunk guys yelling at each other in a parking lot, and suddenly one is legally allowed to carry that. Would you... No. Show the weapon or mention the weapon. Don't fuck with me. I've got a gun. Would you ever say that?
All right. So we have history, right? We've actually been the guys in the parking lot yelling and screaming at each other drunk.
I know. It's kind of funny.
I did not have a gun on my body, but there was one in my truck.
But and you admitted later that you did want to shoot me, though. You did.
No. I wanted to punch you. All right.
All right. Cool. Yeah, but what if I'm 20 feet away?
No, because you weren't.
Would you have fired a warning shot? Would you have just pulled it out and clipped the round off and went, I'm not fucking around, Ledge.
No, 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 because I don't want to aggress against you. We were having a, you know, a heated discussion.
I know.
And we were, you know, you were – actually, I wasn't drunk because I had just had bashed my head the week before. So I didn't drink anything that night. You were very drunk. And what was making me mad was that you were pushing me. You were like – you know, and I'm – look, I'm fatter than you, so it's not easy to push me. And you kind of were like even pushing yourself.
I was doing the thing
me.
Where you take your index finger, your middle finger, and your ring finger, and you just kind of poke someone right in the chest. Yeah. You know, just here, I'm going to do it right here on the mic.
Yeah.
And it just makes that little thud, but it's enough where it hurts a little, so you back up like half a step. And we are literally seeing this band live. Dave and I step outside, as you will, and we're sitting there talking back and forth. And, you know, ironically, here's the funny part. We were talking about politics or a woman or gun ownership. We were talking about whether there's something after you die. Think about that. You know, and Dave was so, there's nothing. And, you know, here we are in a heated drunk argument about whether there's an afterlife. I mean, that's an oxymoron right there. That should be like, hey, man. Pass the joint. Do you think there's like a heaven, dude? I don't know. Instead, it's like, you don't know what you're talking about, man. And then like all the guys in the band were standing there and everybody kind of, is everything cool? And I'm like, yeah, me and Dave are cool. We're doing fine, aren't we, Dave? And you're like, yes, we're doing great. And it was great. It was great. And
right.
I always remember that night.
Fun but time. There was that one time where you just kept poking me a little too much. And I'm like, if he fucking does it again, I was looking at your chin. And I'm fucking punching him right in the face.
You know, I'm not built like, you know, Rocky Balboa. You probably could have dropped me in one. Boom.
And there's a pretty good chance once I swung,
I
would have fell myself.
I punched Ledge. Why did I do that for? You know, I was prodding you on purpose. I wasn't trying to, like, make you violent or, you know. But I was like, oh, yeah, Mr. Oh, I've got it all figured out. I was saying those things like that. Oh, so you got it all figured out? You're absolutely sure there's a consciousness that can't exist past the, you know, the brain? And we were going back and forth. And then, you know, we were doing shots. Ben and I were doing shots. So, yeah, I was the instigator. Absolutely. I've already apologized to you.
Well, you don't need to apologize. It's just we're just stating a story because, you know, yes. Of course, we've had many good conversations from that point on. It was just
That's why you're on my show right now.
Right.
See how that worked out?
So, but the thing is, I would never think about pulling a gun out to hurt you, you know?
I've got little Bambi blue eyes. You're not going to want to shoot me, Dave. Come on.
All right. So I could actually tell another story, right? And here's someone that you also know.
Sean?
It's Sean's father-in-law, Lexi's father. I was at their house.
His name is Mark
Salter.
Salter.
Yeah. At Salty Talk Radio.
Yes.
I was at his house drunk out of my mind, staggering in his studio, and I knocked some shit over, right? Because I couldn't stand up straight. And it was right after somebody else knocked something over, and he grabbed me by the throat, walked me backwards. Now, all right, I'm 6'1", 230 pounds, mostly fat, but I can take care of myself. You know, and I kind of just walk. I let him walk me backwards with my hands up, right? And he gets me out of the door and throws me on the ground. And he mentions, I know you got a gun, right? And like, I didn't even remember that I had a gun at the time. But it's not because I was drunk. It's just because I didn't feel threatened, you know? And I'm not going to shoot
the
guy.
No. You wouldn't shoot me. You wouldn't shoot him. What does the gun, you know, let's say you have a gun and you have a holster and it's, let's say it's not even on your hip publicly. Maybe it's somehow you've got a long T-shirt or a hockey jersey over it. And you're just – what does that gun from the moment you, let's say, leave your truck and you go into a neighborhood, you're going to some movie, you're hanging with friends. You obviously know it's there. And and I always talk to gun owners because I don't own a gun about this. And they always say, yeah, I feel safer. I feel I'm more prepared. So give me your explanation to you go without a gun and you go with a gun. What's the difference?
There really is no difference because I don't act differently. You know, I just feel, I guess, a little more comfortable that I can protect the people that I'm with if bad things happen. And honestly, Scott, I hope that I die never shooting anybody, you know? But I just want to make sure that if something happens, I will not be a victim. And that's kind of the root of the whole thing is I refuse to be a victim. I've lost my ability to defend myself physically.
Is that the libertarian anarchist? Is that why a lot of people in that in those political parties, because they're so pro-Second Amendment, not as much even to, you know, government invasion, that kind of shit. it's more of, you know, I've got a wife or two kids. You know, I've got, you know, a $300,000 house. I've a property. How much of the people you know are really about that, and how much is it macho? Because the way the left is going to paint you guys, and they do it all the time, is that y'all have little dicks, and you know what? And your mama didn't like you, or you didn't get laid in high school, and the whole idea of carrying a gun is to make you feel better about yourself. What would you say to that?
That is absolutely wrong. All right. By the time I was 12 years old, I was mugged three times. I grew up in Brooklyn. I was mugged in third grade of my bus pass. I was mugged. I can't remember the second time too much, but I remember the third time. Luckily, I had a friend with me, and they didn't get anything from us. My parents owned a business in Brooklyn. I guess I was probably late
20s. What are you, at a soup kitchen, by the way? What was that noise? It sounded like someone's doing dishes.
It's possible my son went through and...
Okay. I'm just wondering.
You've been to my house. My studio is in the living room, which is next to the kitchen.
You know, so what you're describing is, you know, the reason you, as an adult, think about defending yourself is because as a youth, or at least as a young adult, you had a run-in with people that at least threatened your being, maybe
right.
You know. I see that. See, I've never had that experience. And when I always wonder what makes the gun carrier want to carry a gun.
When I was 20 years old, I was with this girl for a year. Her father – actually, all right, so she was half black. Her mother's white. Her father's black. The mother took off. She stayed with the father. The father
was she like half black, like Frank Gorshin in the original Star Trek, where she's completely white on one side and completely black on the other side?
I shit you not. She looks like Rihanna.
So she has light eyes and medium skin.
And beautiful hair and, oh my God, this. Oh. Anyway. So
but you have half black, you never go back, you know.
Well, that is not true.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So her father was 40. I was 20. He was the baddest MF-er I knew. He went to the Vietnam War. He was black in the was a teenage black guy in the 60s when it was black power. He was not to be trifled. He was a third degree black belt. He messed with everybody. One to the heart took him out. 9mm to the heart.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah.
And I realized like, wow, you know, at a young age, like the baddest MF-er I knew is gone.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure, you know, and again, I couldn't have guns and also my thing with guns started when I was young. I had a BB gun at 12. When I was in camp,
I respected them. You know, that's the thing about weapons. Right. Hang on a sec. La 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 la. You know, my brother was a hunter and I fired a 12 gauge shotgun and 22 rifle with a scope. So I don't fear weapons, but you know, I was also 8, 9, 10 years old and you know, I can remember everything he taught me was, you know, the first thing he showed me was where the safety was. That was the first thing he showed me. So the point I'm making is the people that haven't been around guns and don't go around guns have a tendency to be fearful of guns. And that is a lot of the left. How much of the libertarian and anarchist stance towards weapons is about fearing government versus what you just told me about?
Well, there is a, hey, I'm going to get a gun because if the S hits the fan, I'm going to be able to take out the government. And the reality of that is, you know, let's be honest. I'm not shooting my way out of an FBI. You know, if they come here to get me for some stupid reason, I'm not shooting my way out of it. You know, I'm just going to be like, all right, guys, you know,
sure.
Guns are over here.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather live to be. And plus, I really don't want to hurt anybody. You know, I only want to hurt somebody that if they're going to hurt me or my loved ones. So the anarchist stance is keep a gun if you want to, but if you don't want to, like you're not, it's not your thing, then don't. But, you know, hopefully I'm around you if something bad happens and I can help you. And that's all it's going to be. And I'll take you to a range if you want to shoot. Yes, if you like it, great. I'll help you get one. If you're not, yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so be it. You know, I'm not the radical anarchist. And I hate using the word anarchist.
Yeah, well, explain that, by the way. We haven't even gotten to the true definition of anarchy or anarchists. So just give me, you know, the Reader's Digest version for listeners that are new to the show. Go ahead.
Well, anarchy really means no rulers. And I could actually quantify that by saying, you know, hierarchy means many people and many, let's just call it rulers. And monarchy means one ruler. Anarchy, like saying atypical, it means none. You know, so it's no rulers. And I don't want to rule. I don't want anybody ruling over me.
We're an anarchist commune. Remember in Monty Python's Holy Grail when King Arthur comes up on Michael Palin and he goes, no, we're a socialist collective. And he goes, no, I'm your king. She goes, well, I didn't vote for you. You know, and that's you know, it's kind of funny. They'll slip that in there. But let me ask you about the whole idea of no rulers. What kind of structure is there? Is there even a, like, let's go, you know, fire police, any of those, any type of sewage, any type of, if in other words, is there a structure that most people would associate with government that is still part of an anarchist, you know, let's say there's, I don't know, one country goes anarchist and they have to build from scratch. They don't inherit what, you know, the capitalists have done. Give me an idea of what that community is like and, you know, who's in charge and who decides shit.
Well, there's plenty of these, and they're called intentional communities. There are actually a bunch of them. There's one in Chile. I can't remember, but it has something to do with John Galt, or Argentina. There are these communities all over the place that are intentional. If you want to live here, you could do what you want, but if you don't pay, then and your house goes on fire, guess what? Nobody comes to help you. You know, if you don't pay for the
police. That sounds like The Godfather.
Well, no, because there's no force here involved, you know. Nobody's forcing you to do anything, and that's kind of the root. And this is why I don't really like the term anarchist. I prefer voluntarist. I think every interaction between adults should be voluntary. Are you eating potato chips?
Nope. I just had to open a plastic bag. How big a leap is it from anarchist to libertarian? Libertarians are all about self-rule.
Well, a libertarian is someone who hasn't been around long enough, because we eventually turn into anarchists because we start realizing that, you know, look, in 2008, I voted libertarian, and it was Bob Barr who – I didn't vote for Bob Barr. I voted libertarian. Mm-hmm. In 2012, I didn't vote at all, which meant that I had no dog in the race, and I actually didn't sit back and think to myself, wow, this is really fucked up because I did not vote for any one of these guys, and now I could kind of see things much, much clearer. You know, Obama was bad. You know, he's worse than George W. Bush. And I remember not voting for George W. Bush in 2004. And so I got to piss on him and kind of say, hey, you know, the Democrat, because I'm a registered Democrat. I'm from New York, you know.
I'm an independent. Always have been ever since I was 18 years old.
Right. I think people like you have been aware of things longer than I have. I'm only here.
No,
I'm only,
you know, honestly, I was, you know, before 2004, you know, going into 9/11, I talked a lot about it because it's my rabbit hole. But going into it, it's not like I was sitting there paying attention to our relationship with Saudi Arabia. I was a rock jock at a station. I had a wife and a house and, you know, I was out there living my life. I wasn't, you know, I didn't realize how rigged the system was. I just assumed that some people succeeded, other people didn't. That we were a certain percentage of corrupt politicians that just simply came with the territory. And I would think about that, like, you know, hey, this Clinton guy seems pretty cool. Life's good. People are making money. Economy seems good. Oh, yeah, we're going into Bosnia. Well, who the fuck knows what Bosnia is and who cares? Well, yeah, Bosnia was connected to something, and it still is. And, you know, you know, 90% of the time it's about energy reserves or any type of whether it's iron ore or aluminum or any time. If a country is sitting on minerals, and look at Africa, by the way, because it's huge and undeveloped. Mm-hmm. And that is the next, you know, once we're done in the Middle East, once the oligarchs are done in the Middle East and they've locked up the energy supplies, then they're going to go after all those minerals and they're going to need more boogeyman. You know, remember the Coney bullshit a couple years ago? Remember that?
2012,
remember,
yeah.
Coney 2012, you know, they literally, much like the movie Wag the Dog, they tried to say, oh, this is the new bad guy, and this is why we need to be in Africa, and so on and so forth. So we get a lot of that, and people are used to it. And my, you know, my take is, okay, someplace in Chile has decided to try some anarchist. Well, do they already own the land? Did they start from scratch? Did they have to earn something to buy an acre? You know, I get it. An anarchist conclave can, you know, rise up in a spot that already exists. But from scratch, is there ever a town meeting? Are there people that are, you know, let's say a night patrol or a watch patrol where everyone volunteers to watch the neighborhoods? You know, what's the mentality for an anarchist in that world? And not everyone's going to volunteer. Some 80-year-old woman in a wheelchair isn't going to be able to be on your night watch, but she might be able to work at the library or something. So,
right.
You know, that's my point is, explain a little bit to me about if, you know, I don't know, a couple thousand years ago didn't exist, and, you know, not even 1,500 years ago when they cornered the banking system and banks started to form because people didn't want to carry gold, and these drafts, otherwise known as checks, came into play and people abused that system. What did we have before that? Barter?
Well, yeah, there's barter. And this is in very recent times that we could actually go back and look at these things. Let's just go 10 years before the Federal Reserve. So let's go 1900. Let's just go 1900, right?
Okay.
Where there wasn't factory farming. There wasn't this. There wasn't that, right? So a guy like me who's disabled, for lack of a better term, I can't farm, right? So what would I do? Would I die on the vine, you know, because I can't eat? Hopefully not. Hopefully somebody would be able to donate their stuff to me. And this, we have.
It's not every man for himself. I think that's what you're talking about. A lot of people think anarchy, you know, they think of that word. Oh, it's every person for themselves.
It's quite the opposite.
And you're like, volunteerism is a big part of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And my mindset over the last couple of years is like, I don't pay taxes. But if I'm driving around and I see somebody that with their hand out and I happen to have food in my car, I give them food. I don't give them money. I give them food. I've given water because sometimes I drive around with, you know, instead of taking it out of my car, I have, you know, 4 or 5 gallons of water in my car. I'll just say, here's a gallon of water for you.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of take care of people that way. And again, let's go back to 1900s, whereas let's say, all right, I can't farm, but you know what? I'm good with a gun. So I'll kind of protect your land while you're doing your thing. So I have, I'm giving you value. You give me value back. And you know,
is it all volunteer? Is any of this assigned? In other words, there's no structure here. I don't see any, you know,
it could be self-assigned.
Do people take turns being, you know, the point man in charge technically?
It's whatever you figure out. And again, this is mutually voluntarily taken care of. And, you know, again, I'm not.
It sounds like a 60s commune, which is the opposite of the word anarchy to everybody. See, a commune is where, you know, and I don't mean that in a socialist or a communist way. I mean the idea that everyone pitches in. If you can garden, you're one of our gardeners. If you're great with a gun or you're, you know, I don't know, if you're great with machines, you fix all our farming equipment, that kind of stuff.
But it was voluntarily done. These communes were voluntarily done. And I'm just saying in my instance, 110 years ago, I couldn't farm. Well, I probably could, but I can't farm. So let me find somebody that actually has more than enough food and let me see what kind of service I could offer that guy that I can do in this day and age. You know, if it's 2016, I could be like, hey man, I'll keep your computers running. I'm a tech guy. I'll figure something out that I could offer you a value and you pay me in food instead of money, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not saying that this is a utopian society. What I'm saying is it's better than it is before. And just don't force me to go into your system, all right? See, that's where I'm not saying that socialism is bad or democracy sucks or whatever. I mean, I do think it does. But you do your stuff over there. Let me do my stuff here. And, you know, if I want to get on the roads, I want to, you know, because I drive to, you know, the Northeast frequently, right? Let me pay the tolls to take care of that because I enjoy the system, right? And look, let's be honest. The
socialist.
The first roads in this country were privately built. There was one in Long Island called
That socialist president built our highway system. You do know that.
Yeah, but what did he build it for? It wasn't FDR. Well, it was Eisenhower.
It actually, Eisenhower had gone over to Germany and he'd seen the Autobahn.
Well,
and it was like the actual first real highway. And he was like, man, we need to do this in the U.S. That's really where he got the idea from. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Well, why did he do it? And it's not because you saw it from China. Commerce. Maybe you got the
commerce.
No. It's to get the military from all over the country. That's exactly. And you could look it up.
Yeah, Army Road of Army Corps of Engineers. You're right. I mean, there's the ones that built it. Yeah.
Why do you think most of the roads are long and straight so they could land airplanes on? I swear, look it up.
No.
I'm not making it up.
No.
Look it up.
No, because it's easier to build a straight road.
Look it up. No, there are
reasons. Now you sound like Sean Raspatello who just watched The X-Files. No,
look it up. I'm not making it up.
You watched The X-Files? Reasons why.
No, I didn't.
Dude.
Never did.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I'm like, the first one was, eh. See, the thing is, they lead with aliens. And that's where they lose me. And that, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of life, microscopic,
The Earth is flat.
There's life in a lot of places, even in our solar system. I think we're going to discover that under maybe Io's, some of Jupiter's moons, where you have heat and you have water. There's a really good chance you're going to have some type of microscopic life. That's life. It's not intelligent life. It's not developed. But it's everywhere in the universe. But when they lead with Roswell and the aliens crashed and our government reverse engineered their technology and they've been using it against us. And then after all that, they get to, oh, yeah, by the way, the Fed and they'll start talking about the control of the media. And I'll go, that's real. That's not. And I'm not saying aliens don't exist. I'm saying until you can literally show the world something that's not on Facebook and gone through Photoshop 100 times. And look at this elongated skull. People, if you want people to take you seriously when you talk about outside of the box issues like this show is about, you cannot lead the conversation with Roswell. And that's what the X-Files does. And yeah, I think that's how they get away with it. Because it's like Art Bell. Art Bell and George Norrie? Art Bell, 13 million listeners. Most, he's done crop circles once a week. They visit the stuff that everybody wants to know about. Clyde Lewis is another one. Clyde's got 100 affiliates. I look at a lot of his content. And it's not as much, we'll talk about a government or, an energy source and things. And they do those things. Don't get me wrong. But they lead with aliens. Mm-hmm. So the government leaves them alone.
Right.
That's how it works. So maybe they're smarter than me. Maybe I just – do you think I need to add, aliens and crop circles to what I do?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's just to me, it's a ridiculous concept. Look. Yes. Is there life in other worlds?
Of course.
Probably,
Probably.
Whatever it happens to build. Well, I'm not going to say definitely. I'm just
do the math.
Say,
exactly. The math alone.
It's arrogant and yes. Mathematically, certain that there is. But I'm just saying probably. I'm taking the easy way out. But,
I'm going to do Jodie Foster. Let's say 100 billion stars in the Milky Way. You take 0.1% and you whittle it all the way down. You still end up with over 10 million worlds with life. And that's just our galaxy. So, of course, there's life elsewhere. The point is, have they come here? Did we capture them? Did they die? All that stuff that ever, all the way back to the pyramids and the Anunnaki. And I don't get me wrong. I don't want to sit there and I don't want to sound like I'm making fun of it. I'm just saying if you really want something tangible to lead a conversation with, you can't go there. You just can't. You can't. You lose me, son of a bitch.
So this is why I don't watch the X-Files.
Well, I watch it and then I'll go oh god, here we go again, and now they got some lizard guy running around and I'm like, okay, I get it, and it was funny because they reversed it. Basically the guy was a lizard, a lizard man, and then a human bit him and turned him into a human. See what they did there? So it actually was funny. They actually added, it was a funny episode, but I was like, next episode you're going to come in and you're going to start talking about the military industrial complex and you're going to talk about PNAC or 9/11 and you're going to, just going to hint at something for 3 minutes and then you're going to disappear back into your crop circles and I don't know. Hey, speaking of this, so since you haven't heard that, I got to hit a break here.
Okay.
And I want to come back and I want to play a piece of that. Because they do lead in with, oh, geez, alien DNA was implanted into several people, and people have been abducted by... In other words, the government recreated the spaceship and then abducted people and butt-probed them, okay? But they weren't butt-probing them like South Park butt-probing them. They were actually implanting alien DNA, and these people were going to become experiments, okay? So what they do is, you know, the woman goes, that's impossible. And all of a sudden, you know what they do? They go to Tuskegee Airmen. They go to something that literally happened where the government infected a whole bunch of black people with syphilis on purpose, didn't tell them. And they'll go to something completely that you can't prove, bam, to something that is incredibly tangible.
Right.
And they
right.
drive me crazy because I'm sorry, I can't do the crop circle thing. It's just not me. I'm not built for it, Dave.
What about the flat earthers?
You know, I saw a couple people humor them, and, you know, you just ask simple questions because they'll say like, oh, you know, the sun is 32 miles away. And I'll go like, well, okay, wait a minute. If the sun's 32 miles away, it's smaller than our moon, or it's, you know what I mean? To look that small. So, how is it even a nuclear furnace? Because you need enough matter. You know, you can go to brown stars and then you go to a yellow star. You need a certain amount of matter condensing into itself for that nuclear reaction to take place. Jupiter is almost big enough to be a brown dwarf. It's almost mm-hmm. big enough to be a brown because it has a, so the, you know, you just throw those questions at them and they go, just watch this video.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm like, it's a star. It's throwing heat and light. You know, right. Big stars have to be so they have a nuclear reaction at their core. If they can't be as big, you know, they can't be like, you know, a small, tiny piece of the size of the moon. And I've heard people talk about a dome like the Truman Show. A lot of people think the Truman Show is actually taking place right now. And you and I are part of an experiment. Do you think we're part of a video game, Dave?
Absolutely not. Why would they make me? What am I, you know, a cheap-ass Neo? No.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're pretty stringent in your beliefs. I'd say you're pretty solid. You know, you don't waver.
Yeah, well,
you're a little. You can butt heads. That's the New Yorker. That's just a New Yorker in you, man.
Right.
All right, listen. We'll play a tune. We're gonna do Carlin's Corner. I think we're gonna do some Doug Stanhope tonight, and we'll be back to finish up about a half hour. With have you said everything about anarchy you want to say? I mean, I kind of teed it up for you, but is there anything else you want to say?
I just want to make sure that most people, you know, when they hear anarchy, they think of guys dressed in black throwing Molotov cocktails.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a co-opted thing. That's not what most of us are. Yeah, there's radicals in every situation, but most anarchists are actually pretty cool people. They you know, I'm an anarchist atheist, but I will fight for you to pray. I stick up.
That's a good bumper sticker. I'm an anarchist atheist, but I will fight for you to pray. That's a good bumper sticker.
Well, that's the truth, you know. Like, I stick up for, and I'm probably going to get some hate for this, but, you know, I stick up for the Muslims. Yeah, I don't like the radical Muslims, but, you know, I was running down 2nd Avenue on September 11th, and my Pakistani friend was running with me, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, we could go into the entire tale of how the mainstream media shapes opinions, and that's what I love so much about the Internet is people are getting that second or third or fourth news source, you know. They do get co-opted. The BBC used to be as much as almost like PBS, but they're co-opted. They get a lot of grants and government tax money goes to fund them. And the moment they're attached to the tit, if you mm-hmm. will, then you really, you know, I was kind of bummed that Al Jazeera America didn't make it. I think it was probably more their business model than the idea they were bringing a third opinion or a fourth opinion, much like RT America does or at least tries to do for the most part. And remember, that's Russia's mouthpiece just as much as CNN is America's mouthpiece. You have to remember both sides of it. But the neat thing is, Dave, and you know as I know, if you can go to three or four opinions, most people that can decipher information and go, oh, I see. Now, this is how Russia, this is how this benefits Russia. This is, you know, and you can connect the dots. And there are great people out there that do that as well. You know, quite a few people. There's his name is James Corbett, and, mm-hmm. and he lives in Japan. And I think if, and, you know, the kind of Abby Martins, Kokesh got a little out of, you know, personal things, but, you know, he brought an interesting perspective. So I think there's a lot of good people out there that are putting together good media pieces, but James Corbett does a tremendous job. I think he's just the typical guy, loves doing research. He presents it all together. He's a good storyteller. He really does round it out. And he I don't want to say he dumbs it down, but he does make it palatable where most people, you don't have to have an economics degree to figure out how the dots are connected on a lot, literally trillions of dollars that were lost and or flowed on 9/11. The reason I bring that up is because that's why I'm such a big fan of the internet. This show is just a grain of sand. All of them are grain of sands, but things are changing. The more educated a populace is, the better off they're going to be. A long time ago, the pen is mightier than the sword. Someone said it differently. And that's the Jones of being able to do a show like this. This is why I love doing DC and, you know, and having a cool guy like Dave on or some of the other crew and stuff is not just to give you a different perspective, but maybe to dispel a rumor that, you know, the word anarchist, if you said that, if you asked 100 people in a room, what does anarchist mean? You know, Dave's right. You probably have 90% of the people write the word chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Versus self-rule or something like that, you know.
Exactly. They think I want to shoot somebody. I want to shoot the government. No, I don't.
Yeah.
I just want them to leave me alone.
They just think you're like a member of the Sex Pistols that's in his 50s and you're pissed off. Or right. 40s. 40s. All right, Dave, stand by. We're coming back.
Nighttime out on the ledge.
You know what's frightening me is I'm starting to think that you're not delusional.
I'm sure you've had a dangerous conversation sometime in your lifetime.
It would help everything if you could just produce some form of identification.
We call it DC for short.
And if you'll excuse me, it's time to make the world safe for democracy.
And we'll burn the night.
Scott Ledger.
On the air.
By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner.
Ledge.
That's why we call it Dangerous Conversation.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
They busted, listen to this, they busted two guys, this is about 18 months ago, in Harris County, Texas, outside of Houston, butt-fucking, two guys butt-fucking in the privacy of their own home. This is, do you know this story, anyone? This is a true story, there's two butt-fuckers, thank you, two butt-fuckers, here's the story. And they're butt-fucking in the privacy of their own home, and there's a third butt-fucker, this is the twist of the story, there was a third butt-fucker on a grassy knoll or something. The third butt-fucker who used to butt-fuck one of the butt-fuckers who's now butt-fucking someone new in the butt in the privacy of his own home, but he knows he's butt-fucking someone new, so he gets all cheesed off and jealous, as people often do, and to interrupt the butt-fucking, he calls 911. This is a true story. He is all sneaky, dials 911, and he reports a burglary going on at that address. Which there kind of was. All right. Yeah, there's a little breaking and entering of some kind going on in there. But it was a shit. That's their business. But cops, or again, as we call them, heroes. Heroes show up, kick in the door, boom. Found them butt-fucking. No burglary, just the butt-fucking. They arrested them under sodomy laws. They convicted them. And an appeals court upheld the conviction and the law in March of 2001, before September 11th. So they couldn't even hype it as terrorist-related butt-fucking to get all the sheep jumping on the party line. Fuck. When you consider, seriously, when you consider the rampant overpopulation in this country, when you consider the natural resources that are getting pissed away, like draft beer at a frat party, the fucking rolling blackouts and gas $5 a gallon, homosexuality is completely underrated in this society. Seriously. You know a homo. Send that guy a cocktail, man. Next time you get a good parking space downtown, send a homo a drink and say, thanks, brother. That's the guy who didn't spit out nine ugly fucking kids in a parking there now. Next time you get to work on time, send a lesbian a bouquet of flowers and say, thanks, girly. That's the chick who didn't spit out more unnecessary youth to make traffic even fucking worse. You got kids, you get to pre-board the airplane, teabag me. You wait till last. You're part of the problem, or you let that homo pre-board. You wear a rubber or get a bus pass. Fucking selfish prick. And this is what pisses me off, is if you go have the nine kids or whatever, and you put them in the biggest gas-chugging SUV that your corporation can afford, and you tool them around the neighborhood at $5 a gallon, and fuck all to the environment. They're going to go play soccer. It comes out of my check. That's what pisses me off. The more kids you have, the more tax breaks you get. You're encouraged to procreate. You pre-board, and people look at your ugly little pictures, and they hold the door for you, and it comes out of my check. I didn't do a goddamn thing. I blow a load in a girl's hair out of respect for the environment and Mother Nature. And not only do I have to pay for your goddamn schools, then I have to drive past a fucking school at 15 miles an hour on my way home to go jack off and watch The Simpsons, because you're not even at the school to get shithead across the street. Your kids shouldn't affect my life, but they do everywhere you look. Everyone's dancing around to protect your fucking stupid kids. I gotta pay for HBO just to hear a comedian say, fuck. To protect your children. $60 a month out of my pocket to protect your kids. I'm going to sit there like a mongoloid with a childproof lighter trying to light my cigarette when I'm drunk to protect your kids. Why is it that I get into a taxi cab at 2:30 in the morning because I'm drunk and I want to go moon sorority girls because I got issues that go years back. But I can't even moon a sorority girl because the taxi cab window only goes down halfway because it's a child safety window, which completely eclipses the whole hangy turkey neck part of the moon. Why even moon a sorority girl if they can't see the swingy egg bag part of it? I'm out $6 on a cab ride because you had to have another baby. because you don't want to mow your own lawn when you're 50. And you didn't make captain of the football team. And you want to see what you'd look like if you didn't eat so much.
Here's Scott Major.
It's supposed to be a dangerous premise.
This just came from the FCC. Did you say testicles on the air?
Oh, no more Yankee, my winky.
You know, most of these people are Satan-worshipping junkies.
What, are you religious or something?
Here's Ledge.
Welcome back to Dangerous Conversation right here at RadioInfluence.com. My special guest tonight is Four Toed Jones, otherwise known as Dave Cunningham, otherwise known as one of the guys I've had on my show many, many times. If you're new to Dangerous Conversation, especially here at Radio Influence with our lineup, about halfway through that, Carlin's Corner is what we call it, comedians. I realize that's the exact... It's the exact same one I played last week. Don't you hate it when that happens? I'm like, you know what? That sounds... Oh, man, I played this same Stanhope last... And I got like 10 of them. And I don't know. You know, it's just like... sucks.
Well, here's what happened with me, right? Because I'm trying to not curse as much.
Cause... Yeah, yeah. And you heard butt-fucking, right, butt-fucking, butt-fucking.
I do love Stanhope, man. He's a nice guy, and
yeah,
I just saw Smart Joe guy. Rogan. I just saw Joe Rogan in the Tampa Theater.
Yeah, he was in Tampa not too long ago. Yeah,
yeah.
How was that show?
It was great, but better than that. As I started, you know, he's got that podcast, right? Actually a YouTube thing, and I would watch it once in a blue. But who's got 3 hours to watch?
Yeah, it's, you know, always 3 hours. Videos? But you know, he's got a lot of people on. People, everybody from someone that thinks along your lines, or Graham Hancock, and people that talk about psychedelics and things like that. Joe's a very open-minded person.
Yeah, and so now I started listening to it via podcast, and it's just amazing. I skipped the MMA guys, but I could imagine that even the MMA guys.
Oh, wait a minute! Now you're on a network that runs a lot of MMA shows. And you just completely dissed MMA on radio.
No.
You've been a radio influence, Dave. Do you realize how many MMA shows we have?
Well, that's why I mentioned MMA is not my thing. But
I don't know anything about it either. I'm just teasing you.
I'm quantifying by saying it's got to be fantastic because his other shows are brilliant.
Well, you know the thing about Joe, he started off as an actor. He ends up on news radio. Fear factor, these kind of things. And obviously Joe is a, he's a martial arts, he practices martial arts. So he knew a lot about the sport going in. Next thing you know, MMA is starting to come up and the cage fighting thing starts to take place. And he becomes entrenched. You know, the best part of all of this was Joe had enough income streams where he decided to do this little podcast. And now he's well over 500,000 listeners a week. Mm-hmm. He'll have the big shot on there. You have a lot of comedians and different people. But again, he's not afraid to, I've heard him mention Building 7. That's about as far as he goes when it comes to something like 9/11. But he'll talk about, isolation tanks and psilocybin and how he's not afraid to at least, he's not the most extreme person, but he's not afraid to have people that are. People that are willing to go to extremes. And that's all an open-minded host needs to be. He's smart. He swears a lot, man. That's what I like about Joe. It's just like if you were sitting around on his couch having a beer and talking to him. He's no different with the mic on than he is with the mic off. He's still a bucket list guy. You know me. He's always been on my bucket list for sure.
Yeah. I would tend to listen to his I think his podcasts were better than his live show. I mean, I loved his live show because it's comedy and whatever.
He's refined it. I'm not, who am I to, critique Joe? But I'll say this. If you watch some of his early comedy specials, he does a lot of yelling. It's almost like he yells the entire set. And then I think, much like Carlin, when you really trust your material and you spend a year writing and then a year on the road and that kind of thing, I think Joe has become a far better stand-up. If you go back and watch some of his early stuff, you'll see what I'm talking about. But I love his content. How do you not love his content? Because he's one of those guys that go, yeah, man, I did mushrooms with my, you know, he's like Hicks. You know, he's like Bill Hicks. And the same thing with Stanhope, too. Stanhope sits there and swigs beer. And he goes, relax. I'm pouring down funny. Because he's slugging a beer. And right. I love that authenticity. That is the best part of why stand-up comedians are, you know Colbert and Stewart and all these people that, you know, quote, did comedy shows. Guess what? They're the ones coming closest to anything that's edgy and biting content that might get a little closer to, you know, it was not necessarily universal truth, but certainly, you know, like you and I discussed earlier, the election and what we're being told about it versus what is probably already planned, you know? So that's why I like Rogan. You know, how do you not like Rogan, dude?
No, I love Rogan. I just didn't – I don't listen to his MMA stuff because I'm not good at that. And I'm, you know.
Well, that's a perfect segue, by the way, because Dave – is everything bread and circus? Is every sport to you bread and circus?
Yeah, sort of. But I also, you know, like people will say if people paid as much attention to the politics as did the Super Bowl, everybody would be. But the thing is, you're supposed to like that stuff. You're supposed to live.
That's what they call it, entertainment.
Right. Pursuit of happiness. If that's what makes you happy, then fine, go do it. It's not me. You know, and I'm a car guy. You know, I'm a grease monkey from the time I'm 14 years old. I don't watch racing either. You know, I'd rather do it than watch it.
Dave's a Mopar guy.
No, I'm. Well, I grew up a GM guy.
That's right. What am I talking about? Yeah.
My first car was a '69 Dodge Charger RT440.
Okay, so you had some Mopar.
Yeah, I didn't get to drive it that much because my mother made me sell it before I even drove it.
That goes too fast.
It was. We took it to a mechanic, and they're like, "Yeah, this is too fast for this 16-year-old." And you know what? They're probably right.
Well, you know what? The idea that enough people are out there questioning the Matrix makes me really happy. In 2004, I stumble upon the ninth grade physics of 9/11, and you know it leads to everything. You start to learn more, and you look into Oklahoma City, and you look into the Gulf of Tonkin, and you look into Operation Northwoods, and you realize that Jesus, this isn't some type of isolated incident. This is the norm, and this is how kings. I mean, it's in The Princess Bride. It's in one of my favorite movies of all time. What do they set out to do? They kidnap her and blame it on the other country so one country can go to war with the other country. It's called false flag. And when you see it and you hear about it, you know, it's hard for people to picture, you know, that the United States government, a small faction of the United States government, and call it the black ops, call it the shadow government, call it what you will, is where the real power lies. And that's who and how 9/11 was orchestrated. And we've all seen the after effects. But the best part of new media, and this is why I'm so, you know, jonesed about it, over the last, I'd say, 5 years, it's been that breakout of a lot of, you know, look at the success of the Young Turks. Now, I know they lean left, but look at the success. You know, Cenk got a little too spicy for mainstream media, okay? They fired him, and he took that, and Anna, and you know what? I think they just hit like a million followers on their YouTube channel. And that, when I look at those numbers and I see a lot of different people with a lot of different opinions all starting to get a voice, and people will flock, you know, to much like if, by the way, who's a couple of the anarchists that you, I don't want to say hold in esteem because that sounds cheesy, but if I were to ask you about, is it Stefan Molyneux and some other people? If people were curious about anarchy and some of the people that you think aren't, I don't know, like when I watched the Ron Paul thing, I saw like everybody got, you know, the libertarians that seem so close together, and then you see the fraying within the system where they can't even agree. They can't agree amongst themselves. Is that the same way with anarchists?
Yeah. Oh my God. So I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. I flew to New York to see Anarchy NYC. I saw Stefan Molyneux. What the hell's his name? Adam Kokesh, and It's all right. Christopher Cantwell.
Yeah,
was there.
There you go.
Three of my favorite people. Now, we all know what happened to Kokesh. He kind of, you know, fizzled out. He's actually, I've heard him within the last 6-8 months.
He's gotten a little bit more spiritual. And, you know, that shotgun thing in Washington, D.C. did not, in other words, it regressed where he could have been. I get it. You know, here I am loading a shotgun, blah, blah. I get the stance. And, you know, I had Adam on the show and I talked to him about it. And I don't think he experienced.
He didn't like your weed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that was early, though. That's back when I was smoking regs or mids. And, you know, he did say, you know what? He didn't regret doing it. He ended up 90 days in lockdown. He wrote a book while he was in there. And everybody's life plays out. But I think if Adam were to go back and do it differently, maybe he. Do you think he does that or no? You know,
probably not. But
yeah, because it kind of detracts from the positive of what you're trying to put out there.
Well,
in
he even says
mainstream eyes. In mainstream eyes.
He also said that he was becoming. He was becoming an ass, is really what it was. It was an ego thing for him, you know. So he got chopped down. He's actually building a house in Arizona, one of those Earthship houses, which I love. And he's kind of he's now more like, I'm not that guy, you know, rallying the troops. I'm just doing my own thing, and I'm going to do my thing. And if you want to come with me, then fine.
He started as a pissed off, articulate veteran.
Right.
Okay, then he runs for office, and people start – you know, the problem is when a lot of people start flocking to you, you lose yourself. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to just, you know, you got to remember. But you know what? Adam, what is he? He's in late 20s, early 30s. I mean, you know, I'm still working on me, and I'm pushing 55. I mean, you know, we're all, you know, a work in progress. We're all a work in progress. So Stefan and Christopher were probably the two most outspoken. And do give me a breakdown. Do these guys get along? What is some of the shakeup? Because, I'm not an anarchist, but I do understand that even within that group, that there is some infighting.
Oh, yeah. They're all separate now. Like Stefan Molyneux, I wouldn't listen to anymore because he became very against feminism. He was just like being a dick about it. And again, I think it went to his head because at one point he had the highest. I mean, he made a living just talking on YouTube at this point. You know, he gave up a lucrative career in computer programming to do this.
Actually, he's an intellect. But then again, what is that intellect based in? If it's based in ego, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I think Kokesh, when I say he got a little bit more spiritual, I don't mean religious. I mean he got centered and he started to see a bigger picture. And I think he became a little less, you know, you can still be outspoken. You don't have to be controversial. Your outspokenness is your controversy. You don't have to. And I know that. So what about Cantwell? I don't know anything about him either.
Cantwell, you've actually had him on the show a number of years back. Seemed to be a nice guy.
Yes. What was the group that formed the veterans who wouldn't shoot Americans?
I don't remember exactly what his thing, but he's completely flipped.
Shit. Keep going. I'm going to think of it. Keep going.
Well, I just started listening to his podcast, I don't know, 6-8 months ago. I thought he was right because he seemed to be a realist and he would bring facts and figures, which I love. But then he started making this turn. He went from libertarian to conservative. He's a big Donald Trump guy. And it just I think he's slightly racist and possibly misogynist.
Okay. And now I got to ask you. Now I got to ask you. Are these guys COINTELPRO?
I don't know. I don't think so because I don't think they're smart enough. You know, they're not. They're like, if I'm going to say anybody's COINTELPRO, it would be what's his face from Texas.
I don't know.
You just mentioned him earlier.
Rubio? Rubio?
No. The radio.
Oh, Alex Jones?
Alex Jones, right.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think they leave him alone. I think, you know, I think Alex gets left alone because Alex's core is a white Christian male.
Right.
And I think what he does is, as any radio, you know, you look at your research, you look at who's listening to you, and you make sure that they're called P1s in the radio business. Priority one. That's your core audience, and you always pander to them. Mm-hmm. I've heard Alex hint, you know, him and Willie Nelson and Jesse Ventura on a tour bus. What do you think they're doing? They're getting cooked down. They're smoking weed. But Alex can't come out and say that publicly. Alex, I've heard him lean towards spirituality, quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and some type of metaphysics, maybe meeting in the middle, versus Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith or Christian faith. But he can't go there, because if he does that, he severs his own vein. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. I don't know much about the anarchists, but I do know by watching the Libertarian Party, I saw a lot of infighting. And it's normal. But picture the halls of Congress. You know, no one's not going to get along. You could have people on the left that, you know, you have your neo-left, and you have your left, and you have your centrist, and then all the way. So you're not going to agree on everything. That is what politics is, or at least should be, is, you know, I vet me. This is what I'm about. This is what I represent. You do that. We find a compromise, and maybe there's a favor paid back and forth. But when it gets to the new media and these people I keep seeing, they kind of come up and everyone's listening to them, and then they all go spastic all of a sudden. And it's almost like, are these guys plants? Because, you know, and another thing, the disillusionment. And remember, you've got, let's say you've got, a healthy number, 10,000 anarchists on a website, on a Facebook page, and it's all about Stefan. And they're like, oh, he's the Dalai Lama of anarchists, and we worship him, and he's awesome. You know what? You're not an anarchist. You're just found another guy. You're another sheep following another shepherd.
Exactly.
When you need to be your own fucking shepherd. And it doesn't matter. Libertarians, I've seen this happen to them. I don't know much about what you're, you know, but I do see a little bit, you know, because I'll see a video and then I'll look at the comments, Dave, and they'll go like, he's an asshole. He lied to all of us. And I'm like, wow. And then I realized it's the same as it would be in a libertarian or a tea party or, you know, any of the groups. The moment you become part of a group, someone is going to rise up and be the Jesus. You know what I mean?
Yep. And I think that's exactly what happened. I watched it happen over the last 5 years, that these people who I really respected and liked and listened to, I just don't give a crap about anymore. And again, because now I don't really follow anybody. I'm just kind of doing my own thing, you know?
Well, I think that isn't that what a true anarchist is?
Well,
I mean, if you get down to the core, it's you're self-reliant. You do, you know, you don't look to another to lead you, correct?
Right.
Exactly. So why would anarchists follow an anarchist?
Exactly.
That's fucked up.
You know? And not only that, I'm an atheist, so I don't even like bow down to any kind of religious thing. So I'm just kind of doing my own thing, you know?
You know, that's why I was poking you in the chest that night. Hmm. You know? I was like, Dave's an atheist. I like talking to atheists. You know, and it's not that I can prove anything. You know, I can't. I can't prove it. I can't.
Right.
We can't physically prove it yet. All we can do is to accounts and what people say and stories, and then you got to follow a money trail. Because you know me and the near death experience. I'm pretty keen on it, and I've read a lot of books from the researchers. And by the way, a lot more doctors are actually doing their own research, because they're in there, the cardiac surgeons, and now they're starting to create their own database, and they are sharing that. And we're finding that worldwide, of course, the near-death experience is much more worldwide because of resuscitation. We now have what we didn't have in the 50s and 60s. And so I'm a big fan of that. It still doesn't prove anything, though. Okay? I mean, when you get down to scientific proof of an afterlife, until you can literally, I float out of my body and so now you know what they're doing now, Dave? They're putting symbols up on the top of the lights in the operating in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Like a happy face or something, just a picture up there.
Right.
So if these people that say, I rose above my body, they won't say, did you see a happy face? They'll wait for them to mention it. And see what I'm saying? Otherwise, it's just like your typical medium who you lead along by giving them too much information.
Right.
So a lot of these researchers, because the OBE, the autobiography. So there is a small segment of doctors doing scientific research on the near-death experience. So I still can't prove there's something. Dave can't prove there isn't. And that's what I was poking in the chest. That and about 5 shots of tequila from Ferris. Okay? It was a little bit of both. It was.
Yeah. I hung out with him on Sunday for Super Bowl Sunday, and we both, like, were totally chill. We didn't really drink a lot. And I was like, it was an interesting experience with him, because you usually hang out with him. We're all like, yeah!
Yeah, you get that his volume control. The first thing you know when Ferris is feeling good, he goes, yeah, he gets louder. Hey, real quick, I know you're not a sports fan, But suddenly, and I don't know much about this so-called Jay-Z and Beyonce. I don't listen to that. It's certainly, mm-hmm. It's okay. She comes out and she does this. Her dancers are wearing some type of Black Panther reference, Black Lives Matter. And most people say there's no way that people that control the Super Bowl and its broadcast would allow that to. In other words, you don't think someone's checking on those costumes ahead of time?
Well,
seriously.
I heard an interesting point of view on the radio today, right? Because it was supposed to be just Coldplay. Right, it was supposed to be their thing, and he was only on there for like the first 2.5 minutes.
That's a guy who stands still and sings soft.
What
you can't have that at the halftime of the Super Bowl. You got to have people running around and giant flames shooting in the air.
Well, that's probably what they said. Is like, really, all we got is Coldplay. Let's get these two people, and what's your face and
Bruno.
Uptown Funk dude,
Bruno Mars.
And so they're probably like, let's spice it up. And they probably didn't even vet it. They're like, can you come on here? Sure, let's put them together. Bam, done. Didn't even probably check it out.
All right, so a couple of questions, real quick.
They're going to have to back
a couple of seconds here. Do you think someone who hasn't been politically active and is that famous should be able to put any Madonna did it with the crosses on stage and her stance against Catholicism. This is a Black performer with everything that's happened in the 2 years. Why can't she do that?
Well, I see. My voluntarist thing says, yeah, sure, let her do it. I don't give a crap. And then actually, as I'm driving home today, I'm thinking to myself, do I actually have to find out exactly what the Black Panthers stood up about? Because everybody's saying on Facebook that, he could do that. But if they went out with KKK, hoods that didn't look like the KKK, it would be a shitstorm. And I'm like, I don't think the Black Panthers are like the KKK.
No. It really rose out of Vietnam. And just the unbelievably lopsided percentage of Black people that were being drafted versus whites and that were being sent to Vietnam and that were dying, the Black Panther Party really rose about the injustices. In other words, why should I fight for your Constitution when I don't even have rights myself? Mm-hmm. And that's really, it's Malcolm X right around that same time where all that stuff kind of hits. What does Beyonce know about that? And does that tie into Black Lives Matter and police brutality? Because people always cross the streams, as they say in Ghostbusters. You can make a message about one thing and it could be misconstrued. I saw her. She had the bullet thing, and the X on her chest. And I was like, ooh, boy, what's this? And I had the sound down because I don't like any of that fucking music. I hate it. And I sat there and I said to myself, something? She looks like she's taking a stance because the and sure enough, there's been the backlash and, and blah, blah, blah. But hey, listen, dude, we're literally out of time. I got to go. How do you like that?
That was great.
Thanks, man. A quick 2 hours. That's why I love you, Dave. That's what all the girls say about me. I'm a quick 2 hours. Because I was going to say that about you. See, I was going to say that about you. And I was like, no, that sounds better about me.
Yeah, I'm not even good for 2 minutes.
Dave and I were brought to you by Mumble, which is a software, right here at radioinfluence.com. And the neat thing about this is Dave's going to teach me how I can put a basically, Dave is, what would you call that? You're like the point man. What do you call that
I'm the IT guy.
No, I mean, you're the server, right? You're the server. So, in other words, right now, if you, me, the reason I say this, a lot of radio people listen to this. So if you, me, Ferris, another person, all wanted to do a show together, like we did tonight.
Yeah, it's my server.
I'm
looking at it right now. It's 3 feet away from me.
And it's not visual. By the way, there were no visual cues tonight. It's just that, Dave knows I know what the fuck I'm doing and trust it. And that's how it works. But should I be a point man if I wanted to do a regular crew once a month?
I'm working on it.
Should
I
do it from my – in other words, should I do it from here?
No. I have a better way of doing it, and I didn't get a chance to configure it. I want us to use this other way.
Okay. Cool.
We'll talk about it after.
Not tech talk. The reason we do that is because every time I get a chance to do a show that sounds pretty much seamless like we did tonight – a lot of people think you're sitting here right next to me. You're not. You're literally a county away, And that's the and it's not Skype. This is not Skype. Skype is not a good two-way audio exchange. Dave and I can both Dave talks same time as me.
I can say, yeah.
See, we can both say, this, see, and you can
and
hear
we hear
both.
Each other.
Yes, and we both hear each other. So it's a different
which
kind
means
of software.
We should shut up.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to let Captain Geach take us off. Have a good night, brother, and I appreciate your input. And Anakin, UK.
All right, man. See you later.
Later.
This week on Crush Performance, we follow up the Super Bowl with a look at concussions in sport. Are we doing enough to raise awareness and improve player safety and long-term health? Chris Nowinski, co-founder of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, joins us to talk about their ongoing research into CTE, and we'll look at some potentially game-changing technology as we talk with Dr. Samuel Broud about the new Visus 01 helmet. So join us for a serious look at athlete safety right here on Crush Performance.